Hello and welcome. Scare Track. Scare Track Podcast.
Welcome to the Scare Track Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my God!
I'm scared myself!
Kate Monroe is screaming. Spoiler alert, freaking awesome.
The
quality of the set was amazing.
Oh, I don't like it.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Mikey and today's episode is an interview episode with Spencer Terry, the general manager of Fear Factory in Salt Lake City, Utah. Now, it's a very special episode today because we're going to be discussing their contingency plan during COVID-19 as Fear Factory in Salt Lake City, Utah was able to open and operate its haunt during the COVID-19 global pandemic. Now, of course, here in the UK, we're very in the dark on what kind of Halloween we may be having. Of course, it's still 2.5 months away and a lot can happen in that time. However, at the moment, we really don't know if we're going to have any attractions allowed to open at all, whether they can open as normal, or whether they're going to be opening in a COVID secure way. Now, Fear Factory opened at the end of May for their halfway to Halloween event, and they put in lots and lots of different procedures to make sure that they were COVID secure. Now, they were the first scare attraction haunt in the world to be able to open during the global pandemic. So we thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to get Spencer onto the Scare Track Podcast to basically give all his knowledge regarding running an attraction during these crazy times. So before we get into the interview, a little bit of background about Fear Factory in Salt Lake City, Utah. Obviously, you guys over in the States, you probably know all about it already. But if you're here in the UK and you're not quite familiar, first of all, head over to their website. I'll put the link in the show notes below. Check them out on YouTube. The place looks absolutely insane. It's made up of 6 buildings up to 6 stories high. It has 2 underground passages. It's been ranked as number 3 best haunted attraction in the world on BuzzFeed.com. It's reached the top 10 in the US on USA Today and the Travel Channel. It truly is a phenomenal attraction, and it's definitely on my bucket list. I want to get over to the States and try it out myself. And of course, we're going to be talking to Spencer Terry, who's currently the general manager of Fear Factory Haunted House. And he's also on the Haunted Attraction Association board as well in the States. He's been a consultant in retail, human resources, business hospitality, and non-profitable fields for over a decade. So he really does know his stuff. And like I say, he's running Fear Factory. I think he said in the interview that he's in his 5th year now. And that is a beast in itself. Like I say, 6 buildings, up to 250 members of staff. It really is a beast of an attraction. And the fact that they've not only been able to open safely and securely during the peak of a global pandemic over in the States, but they've also put together a huge 60-page contingency plan that they're giving away for free. So if you run an attraction here in the UK, definitely listen to this episode. I really do think it would be beneficial. And then at the end, download that completely free plan that will really help us out. I really do think it will. It's a very uncertain time here in the UK and, well, around the world. We just really don't know what's going on. As of today of recording, the 9th of July, they have announced that outdoor performance and theatres able to start with a socially distanced audience. That is step one. And like I say, there's 2.5 months till October. Yeah, I really do think that providing the R rate goes down and we have less and less cases of COVID, that we really will have at least some sort of Halloween to celebrate here in the UK. So without any further ado, let's take you to the interview with Spencer Terry from Fear Factory.
You're listening to Scare Track.
Hi guys, and welcome back to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. Like I said in the intro, I am here with Spencer Terry. Spencer, hello, welcome to the Scare Track Podcast. Thank you so, so much for coming on.
Hey, absolutely. Really excited to be here. Thanks for having us on.
No, it really does mean a lot. You guys at Fear Factory, you were able to open during a COVID world. And here in the UK, we are a little bit lost at the minute. And we thought, what better than to get someone who's actually opened during this crazy time. Are you safe and well? That's the main thing first during these weird dark times.
Indeed. I've got a chai in my hand and the sun shines out, so all is well here. How are you guys?
Perfect. We're good. Yeah, there's definitely light at the end of our tunnel now. It seems like things are trying to get back to normal. But at the moment, our Halloween is very much hanging in the balance, as I'm sure it is over there with you guys as well. But you ran your halfway to Halloween event in May, and all our halfway to Halloween events, unfortunately, were cancelled. But let's talk about Fear Factory, a little bit about the haunt before we get onto this COVID-19 episode. I mean, I've been checking out videos. I've been looking at the website. It's a beast, isn't it, this haunt?
It literally is its own monster. Yeah, it really is.
And it's, what, six buildings big, and you've got rides, 250 staff. It's insane.
Yeah, it's if there's a haunted house that really is kind of one of the biggest and best, it's definitely the Factory. It's it's almost 3/4 of a mile walkthrough.
Wow.
By the time you come on our property to the time you're through the end of the exit, it's huge. Six different buildings, up to six stories high. We actually push people across a catwalk that's six stories high. You can see below you. And it's just, it's got everything you can imagine. It's got heights, it's got lows, it's got dark, it has two underground passages. It's legitimately haunted. There's 11 people that have died there. I mean, it really is the perfect scenario. Our owners did a bang up job when they found the place. So
yeah, big time. And it's one that's definitely now on my bucket list. As soon as I can fly to the States, I am over. Seriously,
looks phenomenal. You're welcome anytime. Come on over.
Really, really appreciate that. Absolutely. And of course, you're the general manager, which at the moment I'm sure it's basically added a lot of new jobs for you, as if you weren't busy enough. With COVID-19 coming about, it's just added so many spanners in the work. So, obviously, you guys were able to open for your halfway to Halloween event, which is absolutely fantastic. But what did it actually take to pull that off when it came to the planning and the research?
Yeah, it's, it really has been ever since Transworld canceled, because I'm also on the Haunted Attraction Association Board of Directors, the HAA. It really has kind of there's been many ripples in our pond. And certainly that started a kind of a dwindling downhill as of, March, when Transworld started announcing, and when Disney closed, and when here in the US, the National Hockey League closed, and a lot of those bigger entertainment venues. And we realized very quickly, we started seeing the writing on the wall that things were going to be different for 2020 and certainly 2021. So we made a decision. We originally had on the books and planned for a May 15th and 16th, Friday and Saturday weekend. And we just didn't know if we honestly, very similar to the half of Halloween events in the UK, it sounds like, where they were all just completely canceled. Very similarly here, every day I felt like all of these just big name haunted houses that typically do a halfway to Halloween branded event just started dropping like flies. And so I asked our owners and said, listen, I think there's a way out of this. It's going to be uphill and it's going to cost us a lot of money. But I think if you guys are willing to give it a shot, let's give it a shot. And we went back and forth for weeks because quite frankly, we all hate COVID at this point. Like, I think, I can speak for all of us. Like, I think, COVID, if there's one thing that really sucks about COVID is that it essentially has taken the fun out of life, right? Like you can't see people smile because you're wearing a mask. You can't really tell jokes as much. They're just not as funny. There's all the fun element of entertainment or theater or artistry. Like a lot of those have been taken out for COVID. And for us, you know, we're in this business of fun. And so it really does. It really sucks. So we made a decision and we said, you know what, let's just kind of hold the line and let's start working and putting some plans into place. Thank goodness I prior to my time at Fear Factory, I used to run a casino and a hotel and six different restaurants. And so I'm very familiar with the cleaning from the health department aspect of things. So thankfully, and quite frankly, as I now talk to people industry wide, that's not an expertise that most people have. And it thankfully it paid off for us, and it's hopefully going to start paying off for the industry. And so I immediately started building this contingency plan, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about. That's 60 pages. That's for free. Anyone can view it. And that helped us be able to show our governor and the Coronavirus Advisory Committee and our county government and our city government that we not only can open, but we can open safely. And that ultimately allowed us to test test the waters and be able to open successfully. So yeah, it's been I look back now and I don't know if it was the smartest decision of my career or the dumbest decision of my career, but it certainly was a lot of work. Our team just, you know, I'm so proud of our team. We put a lot of time into it, and you know, I certainly didn't build this contingency plan on my own. Probably a good 90% of it is my drafting, but there's so many people that are helping do the research. But really, at the end of the day, you know, a plan is only a plan if it's not executed well. And our team I'm really proud of them. They really did they killed it. That's the best way to tell it. Like, they really did great. So really proud of them.
Absolutely. And also as well, you mentioned that you're not sure if it's the smartest or the silliest thing you've done. And what it has done to people like me and other people here in the UK, I'm sure, and around the States and the whole world, you know, this idea of haunted attractions or scare attractions and haunted houses. It is, like you said right at the beginning of this interview, it's fun. It's you're in the fun, the entertainment business. It at least gives us a little bit of hope. And that's what we need at these weird, crazy, dark times that no one, if we were having this conversation a year ago, we wouldn't have believed what sort of position we're all be in now.
Agreed.
So, you know, the fact that you guys are, you know, I was supposed to be going to an event in May for halfway to Halloween, War Purges Night, and all of a sudden it gets cancelled. But I look on, HAS and whatnot, and I see, oh my God, those guys have managed to open. And like I say, we'll get into the contingency plan a little bit later, but it gave us it gave me a bit of hope, and I was like, fantastic. Some people are really working hard and trying hard, and like you say you're able to help at least the rest of the industry by looking at this plan and whatnot. And like you say, there's gotta have been a lot of hard work in there. Things like staff training. I mean, it's all well and good yourself as the management and the owners of knowing what to do and the procedures you put in place. But how was it training up to, you know, up to 250 staff?
It was hard because, certainly it was hard. But we had to rethink how to do everything. You think it for us in haunts, you know, right, some of the biggest and best pop scares are within that 6-foot range.
Cool.
And there's just, so we completely had to step back from what we would consider normal. And we pretty much redesigned, from the ground up. And so we looked at, in our zones, there's, you know, as massive as we are, we probably walked through our entire property, I don't know, 5-10 times. And every time we changed more and more and more things. Wow. And our construction crew, you know, one of our co-owners, Keith Sharp, who he probably hates Corona out of all of us. He thinks it's a piece of shit. And we all hate it. He purposefully, you know, he hates having to change something that's already really great. You know, it's like, how do you as an artist, right? Like, he's in charge of construction, so you're building these sets. It's like telling a makeup artist, hey, I kind of like your makeup, but you have to change it because of COVID. Like, it kind of gets personal, right?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
So we had to change everything. So from the construction side, and then, you know, one of our other owners, Rob Dunfield, who who kind of helps with the back of house and a lot of, and is involved with a lot of our cast back of house. We had to literally rethink, you know, how do we scare outside of 6 feet? Does that mean that we need to utilize more audio scares? Does that mean that there has to be more pop outs behind the walls? You know, and then that of course has to integrate with our construction team because, you know, every single pop or every single drop down, you know, a drop down wall, for example, boom, you're within that 6 feet immediately. So we had to put plexiglass in between all of those and just so many things have to rethink. And, you know, we have a really great training team, that's led by, one of our supervisors, Skix. And Skix, we asked Skix and said, hey, listen, like at this point, this was middle, late March. And because we knew we couldn't do trainings, we asked Skix and said, hey, can you do some video trainings? Like, let's just every week, let's do video training, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you want. And just something to engage. Because at that point, quarantine was kind of really a big deal and everyone was staying home. And so it gave us a chance to just to reach out to our team and remind them that we love them and remind them that we're here and, you know, things aren't as bad as they currently feel like they are. I think a lot of our team was kind of slipping into that despair moment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was really great. So I think, yeah, the training was literally, it was from, yeah, and that's just the actor side. You know, then you look at the customer service side because they're all interacting within 6 feet. So what does that look like? And how, you know, how do you say, hey, can I get your tickets from you now, but I can't touch your phone and I can't scan it and we have to keep the 6 foot distance. And then you look at training from the makeup team. You know, we made a decision to have no brushes. It was a contactless operation. So that means that all of our team had to learn airbrush within a month and a half. And we pushed a lot of our brush makeup artists to go that direction and they just killed it. I mean, some of the photos on the contingency plan that are now from the post report showing how we've developed masks to go over the medical masks.
Yes, I saw. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I could not be more proud. Our, you know, Chelsea and Becky are our two makeup managers. They really knocked it out of the park. I mean, I don't know how you I mean, how do you think as a makeup artist that, you know, one day you'd have to be building a mask to go over a mask? Like, it's just ridiculous,
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, across the board, I mean, training was certainly a very uphill battle. It all was. But we have a really strong team and I think we did great. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose when it comes to either staff training or whatnot, it is a case of you can't just look at each individual issue and tackle that individually. It does have to be a whole collective, like you mentioned with the construction. If you have to research and plan a certain design, then get someone to construct it, that's when you can tell your staff on, you know, you're basically changing how they haunt or how they scare. Yeah. So it all has to be a big collective of ideas, make sure it works. You mentioned plexiglass. That was a question I was going to bring up, actually. I mean, here in the UK, it feels like I actually haven't seen a person without a piece of plastic, apart from my wife and my cats. I feel like everyone else I've met in the last month, it's been between a bit of plastic. Now, it works, it helps, if it beats it, it helps us beat COVID, that's fantastic. Is that something that was quite prominent in your haunt this year, that there's lots of screens of plexiglass? How did that work and how did that look?
Yeah, great question. You know, we had heard rumors of some haunted houses that literally were saying, well, we're just going to put up plexiglass hallways. And so it's like walking through a plexiglass tunnel through our whole haunted house. And that way the actors can still get up and scare people close proximity.
Right.
We didn't feel like that would fly. And I am glad we decided not to go to that direction. Because I think it kind of takes away from the authenticity of what, you know, why do we go to a haunted house? Like, right. We know it's going to be a little scary. We know it's going to be a little dirty. Like, that's part of the experience. And so We made a decision to change a couple of things, but for the most part, sets wise, we used very little plexiglass. There were other things that we did, construction wise, you know, where you've got maybe it's an actor who can scare from behind a wall, but then they can push a trigger so that 10 feet down the way, they trigger an audio scare that's just a speaker, but they can still line of sight, see where that customer is, so they can still get that, you know, that really quick quick timing that sometimes animatronic misses. And, you know, sure, it's a speaker and some, you know, a trigger and some speaker wire. It's probably going to cost you $30-$50 maybe. But it worked. And so what we ended up doing is we dropped our staffing dramatically in order to make sure that there was not only 6-foot distancing between our customers, but also internally our staff.
Course,
and doing so, that allowed us to say, how do we fill those spaces that we're going to be missing? And that's where the construction team was pretty much working around the clock to kind of help get those empty actor spaces filled.
Yeah, I see. It's cool that, I mean, it's basically forced you in a way just to find, not find, but utilize the different types of scares within your horn. Obviously, you mentioned... you know, music or audio scares, which I think here in the UK we just don't have enough of those whatsoever. I've been to Halloween Horror Nights and I've been to Busch Gardens, so they're the only places I've been in the States. But I've also been to Germany for the last 7 years that are very heavy on these audio scares. You know, all you need is a crazy bit of audio with a strobe go off, and that can scare me, and you don't need to have an actor in sight. And here in the UK, I think we don't have, obviously we are heavily reliant on audio, but more so with soundtracks and sound effects, but not actual scares. So it's cool that you've used, rather in certain areas where you potentially may have had an actor before, and you haven't just gone, right, we're going to have a blank space, or we'll put in an animatronic that doesn't really make sense in that place, but we'll pull it in there anyway to get a scare. The fact that you're obviously keeping it in with the theme and the idea of the actual section of the horn, and, you know, audio scares, you don't need to be socially distanced from audio because it's just there. Absolutely. You know? So, is that something, is that, you know, one of the key examples you'd think of how you changed this year, lots more audio style scares?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the changes overall, certainly from the customer experience, yes. So between audio scares, other trigger scares, you know, like even something like a hammer knocker, where, you know, it's just pneumatically driven. You know, someone walks by, it trips a laser or it trips something, and that knocks on, you know, maybe you're climbing up the stairs. You know, we have over 18 flights of stairs in the property. I mean, when we say how big this thing is, that gives you an idea. And so as you're climbing up these old, you know, 1800s industrial metal stairs, if we can put a hammer knocker on there that, you know, it'll rattle as you're walking up the stairs, you feel that. You know, you feel that in your feet, you feel that in the handrail, and it works really well. So, and you know, like even small things like air blasts. Those are pretty simple. Yeah. You know, that's pretty easy. Most folks that are used to pneumatic can rig one of those up pretty quickly and, you know, add an extra couple of those in strange places that are just different, drill a hole through the wall and put your inlet pipe in and boom, you're good to go. So I think there's certainly ways to do it. It really did just take a lot of time, you know, and I think for even smaller haunted houses, you know, most, you know, here I am talking about spending a lot of this money, but you know, my first haunted house I ever owned was a small little nonprofit haunted house. And, in that case, you know, if you're operating with volunteers, you can still have those volunteers behind the wall. You know, maybe they are, it's still a hand trigger. It's not, you know, it's not an automated trigger, but they can still spray people through the holes, or, you know, they can still trigger those speakers, or they can still slam bricks on the backside of a wall as someone's walking down a hallway. And there's still ways to do it. You just have to, just got to be thinking a little outside of the box.
Yeah, absolutely. And just having that variety rather than actor scare, actor scare, actor scare. It is having the variety. And in fairness, that could heighten an experience of a haunt, especially, like I say, here in the UK, where I just feel I might have some listeners shouting at me now thinking, no, there's loads of places that do audio scares, but me personally, I don't feel that we have enough of them. So if this Halloween, touch wood, can all go ahead as most haunts plan to, it'd be cool to see a few different dynamic style scares, you know, here in the UK that you guys are implemented at Fear Factory. Obviously, with you know, you've got to make sure your actors are socially distanced, and you mentioned that you had a smaller team to be able to adhere to that. How did you sort of communicate everything to your audience, to your customers? Were they only going in their small groups? I don't know what your group sizes were before COVID. Did it change much? How did the interaction with your, you know, your audience, your fan base, your customers work?
Yeah, that was likewise just as hard. I bet. You know, how do you communicate to a group of thousands and thousands of fans that they have to do something completely different and something that they're probably not going to want to do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how it's been there for you all, but I mean, every single time a business said, well, you're required to wear a mask, and everyone just kind of lost their shit and was like, oh, you can't force me to wear a mask. It's my freedom. And I'm like, oh my gosh, people. And I get it. Like, I totally get it 100%. But I also have to look at the economic side, that if we want to open up an economy, then sometimes we're going to have to do things we don't want to do.
Exactly.
And, exactly. And of course, now here locally, in fact, our Utah governor just last 2 weeks ago just made a decision and said, yep, I'm requiring within these specific counties in our state that you're required to wear, you know, the county mayors actually requested from the governor to make the mandate. So now masks are required in some of our areas. And so,
wow.
We've kind of been going up and down, and I've been watching your numbers, just kind of getting ready for the call today. And certainly mm-hmm. you all are on a decline where,
big time, comparatively
to the US, unfortunately we're not, and we're,
no.
It's like, it's opposite. And it's, and I, you know, I think there's a lot of factors involved, and so we're, you know, Utah wise, we're doing our part to try and keep those numbers low, but yeah, to get, you know, to think back to how we were able to communicate to the customers, it's hard. We made a decision of how we were going to strategically market this. And we realized that as the first haunted house in the world to open during COVID, that there was going to be a lot of backlash. And there were going to be the people there like, you guys are up in the night. You're crazy. What are you doing? You're going to make it worse for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, we had some of that on social media, even when we announced it on Haunters Hangout, on the Facebook group. Some people, we were just talking trash, and I'm like, until you've read our 30 page contingency plan, you know, unless you've read the plan, you don't get to bash us, because we're working with our government, and we have an approval, like we're good to go. So. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, in communicating, one of the things that I would highly suggest, and this is something that I've tried to make clear across the board and all these different seminars and interviews that I've done, is you've got to be able to address the white elephant in the room. And
absolutely.
In this case, the elephant is COVID. And so, and rather than, you know, like, hey, come to our big scary haunted house, it's going to be awesome. And P.S., we're doing everything we possibly can to be safe. Flip it around and put it bold on your media, put it in very, you know, make sure that it's very prominent, that people understand that you're taking it serious. Because at the end of the day, everyone knows in our industry, and if you don't know this, then you should not be working in the industry, that safety should always be number one.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. As customers, they're giving us their money because they understand that they're essentially relinquishing they're giving us their trust to do something to them that they're very uncomfortable with, but they're allowing us to do it, and they're giving us that consent because they know they're safe.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
And to be able to say, just come to our scary haunted house, we don't really care about what's going to happen with COVID, and we may or may not wear PPE, who cares? It's not going to fly. It just won't.
Yeah.
We've seen some other haunted houses that have tried doing that, and they're like, man, we're not going to mention it. We're just going to open up anyway. And sure enough, their numbers are down like 40, 50, 60%.
Wow.
Wow. So for us being able to say like, hey, we're taking this serious. These are the steps that we're going to take, and here's what we expect from you. And, you know, we did several, if you go to our Facebook page, which is Fear Factory SLC, you can go scroll back and you'll be able to see the videos that I put together. But essentially, I walked through the whole property and literally inch by inch kind of walked all of our customers through what you would experience from a customer, you know, essentially that customer walking space. So from the moment you came into our gate to the moment you went into the haunted house, what do you expect? What is it going to look like? What is the signage for? What do we expect of you? And just kind of really, really just kind of helped people understand and visualize. Because at this point, no one had done this before, and no one really knew what to expect.
Yeah.
And then, of course, from there, We also sent a pre-email out to all of our ticket purchasers ahead of time. I don't know if the viewers know this or not. We did sell out, so we operated at a lower, a reduced occupancy. And quite frankly, we probably could have sold more tickets, but I wasn't willing to jeopardize the industry. And, you know,
of course, yeah,
the whole industry gets, you know, shut down because Fear Factory screwed up. And so,
yeah, you don't want that on your
CV. Yeah, I don't want that one. No, thanks. So, so we did that. We sold out both nights.
And this was May 29th and May 30th.
And 30th. Yeah. Yep. And we sold out ahead of time. Before we even opened, and we could tell, and as we polled and we did kind of a post attendance, post show survey of our customers, and sure enough, the data is very true that, you know, part of us communicating that safety ahead of time and clearly to them is what made them feel safe enough to come in the middle of a pandemic. So I definitely take that, take it seriously. And I think, you know, one of the other things that really worked out well for us is how are we able to communicate that? And we, you know, we worked with other haunted houses locally. I mean, I pretty much put a Zoom group together and, we did video calls every week with all the haunted house operators and owners in the state. We kind of opened it to everyone and said, hey, if you want to come into this chat, we'd love to just work together and let's figure out how do we just make sure that we're all on the same page? Because what would suck is to have, you know, one haunted house doing something one way and then another haunted house doing it the other way. And someone is going to get, you know, there's going to be some fallout somewhere, definitely, whether that's on the consumer confidence side or it's on the ticket purchase side. And so we just wanted to make sure that it was good across the board. And it did. It worked out really well. So
yeah, big time, absolutely. And you know, you mentioned in that you obviously had a slightly less capacity, but the fact that you were able to sell out with that slightly less capacity shows that you've given your customers sort of the peace of mind and the confidence that you guys are doing things right. You know, here in the UK, we've just had theme parks reopen. And again, they are all based, I mean, half our theme parks in the UK are all owned by the same company anyway. But the other ones, they all do seem to be following near enough the exact same guidelines, the exact times where you need to wear a mask or you need to be temperature checked or social distancing of 2 meters or 1 meter. And it's now reduced. So, having a sort of overall rule of thumb really for everyone so it all works well definitely helps out, and I think that will help us especially here in the UK as well. We are the UK, we're tiny compared to you guys. We really are. I can get from the top of the UK to the bottom within a day driving. And the amount of haunts and scare attractions and fear farms, things like that, they're popping up new ones each and every year.
I know, it's exciting.
I'm loving it. It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, I do not sleep in October anymore, but it's great. You know, the business is really booming and we are all, you know, 99.9% all friendly. We all know each other. We're all interacting with each other. So it's great that you guys as well in your state were able to all come together. And I'm hoping that's something that we can do here in the UK as well. Everyone can sort of come together and go, right, our rules are going to be X, Y, and Z because this contingency plan works. This is what these guys did. And moving forwards, hopefully everyone has the same sort of outlook, really. So the night, it turned out, you know, the fact that you've sold out, it was a big success.
Yeah, absolutely. We, unbeknownst to us, we actually ended up not opening Saturday, based on here in Salt Lake, there was, you know, a huge riot with regards to Black Lives Matter. Yeah. And so we had planned to open and our mayor had made an executive decision and closed the city down at 8 p.m., which, of course, is when we were planning to open. And so we respectfully said, you know what, we believe in being able to support that movement and being able to support people who, you know, in general, we want a place for all of us. And I think as haunters, you know, that's part of why we love haunting is because the rest of the world usually tells us to go, you know, go away. And haunted houses are that one place where people can come be who they are.
Definitely.
And so we thought it was important to respect that, and we certainly, you know, we certainly wanted to do our part. And so we closed our business down. And I mean, I I cannot tell you the amount of angst that there was connected to working for months straight for essentially a 24-hour open on May 20th and not being able to open on the 30th. It just killed me. And of course, our staff was disappointed and everyone that had worked so hard. But the silver lining was is that we were able to open on the 29th and successfully open. And the silver lining for that is that, you know, now it's been obviously many weeks past that, but we've learned since then the health department was planning on getting concerns called, and they did not have a single there's a kind of like a hotline or a tip line that people can just call and say, hey, I'm currently at Fear Factory and they're doing this and they're doing this and they're doing this. Quick, send the health department police. They didn't get a single phone call. And we now know weeks later that not a single contraction happened at Fear Factory between our staff or our customers. So everything that we did is, you know, is it a little bit of overkill? Yes. Did it pay off? Yes. And in this case, you know, I think one of the things to think about is people say, well, yeah, but that was just one night. And that's exactly why we did it, is because I want to know how this is going to affect my operation in the fall. Because, you know, we've even looked at creating different teams to where we have, you know, an A team, B team, and a C team, and they all together on different days. Because if one person gets sick and they, you know, potentially get two or three people sick, that can spread really quickly. And so we want to contain as much of those and silo those staff as possible. So those are all learning moments that we had during that event that are really going to help us be able to be successful in the fall. And we just opened, we just announced our dates. So we are going to, instead of usually our 40-day operating season, we're going to operate a little under 30 days, 28 days total technically. Mm-hmm. But still, that's 28 days that we get to do what we love and the world gets to come see and do what we love. So I'd rather take 28 days any day of the week.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one, you know, and that's why it was the silver lining. At least you were able to do one day, even though you couldn't do the two.
Yeah.
You know, at least, I mean, imagine how heartbreaking it would be that you've put all this into place and you weren't even able to open either night. Gosh.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That, the fact that you were able to open a night, and I suppose that is kind of just your, it is your dress rehearsal for when October comes, and you've now got these things in place. Like you say, you've learned a couple of things from it as well. You know that it works. You know that customers feel safe. When it came to the customers, did you, obviously I know that you guys put you had less actors, they were social distancing, they had the awesome masks, and anyone listening now, go over and check out the website. It'll be in the show notes below. The masks look absolutely awesome. Did you require, what did you require from the customers? Did they have to wear face masks? Did they go in smaller groups? How did it work with the customers?
Yeah, we made a decision to not require masks. At that point in time, the state wasn't requiring them and the county was not requiring them. So that gave us a little bit of flexibility to pretty much use the language from our county health department, which said that we strongly encourage wearing a mask. All of our staff were in masks. I was in a mask. You know, a good majority of our front of house team that's working with customers, they actually had masks and gloves and then a face shield as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was extra protection, but you know, looking back now, I mean, it obviously helped. There weren't any concerns. So
yeah, true.
Customer wise, they, you know, other than what we told them ahead of time, one of the hardest things for us was that the state required us to, it's called, I don't know if you guys have it there, but it's called household groups, where essentially, if you are going to go to an event, you have, or you're going to go to dinner, for example, you can only do it with your household group, and that's it. And is that similar there?
We have, I mean, for us, bars and restaurants only opened 5 days ago.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, it's. I think I'll be 100% honest. It's changing quite rapidly now. At one point, obviously, we were locked indoors, don't see anyone else for 3 weeks. Then it was another 3 weeks, and now you can meet and you can have another household in your social bubble. And there's a few different regulations coming in, but I understand what you mean by, like, obviously just keeping with your household.
Yeah, and I think I've heard a few folks from the UK call the bubble, and I reference the bubble. Yeah. That must be the term.
Like a social bubble.
Yeah. So similarly, then that means that we had to tell people on the ticket, like, hey, you can only come through the haunted house with the group in your household group or your bubble. So if that means then that, you know, imagine if the health department was on property and they're like, hey, there's a group of six boys that all want to go through and they're all high school age and they don't look like they're from the same family. What are you going to do about it? So that's where we then had to say, you know, okay, we're going to ask everyone then. We'll just ask them. Say, are you part of a household group? And if you're not, we have to split you up. And if they lie to us and tell us, yeah, we're part of the same household group, I don't care. Like, at the end of the day, like, I want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to be safe. But if the customer is going to lie to me, the customer is going to lie to me. I can't do anything about that. So
exactly. It's a two-way street, really, exactly. Isn't it?
Yeah. So that's one of the things that we did is, you know, we did our best to make sure that household groups were certainly part of the equation. And we asked them two different times. And there was language on the ticket purchase page. There was language on the confirmation page, to the email, the pre-email that went out 48 hours before they came to the attraction. And so we did that. We also did, of course, instead of 6-foot distancing, there it was 2 meters. I really wish the United States would get their act together and we could all go back to metrics like the rest of the world. But maybe one day, I'll get my way. <We'll>, but we made a decision instead of this whole 6-foot thing, we extended that to 12 feet. And it was one of the best decisions we could have done because we went to another haunted house and, you know, I've seen people who were taking pictures of the groups that were 6 feet apart. But, you know, if you're a group of two and you're 6 feet apart, there's a decent amount of space between you and your group. But quite frankly, the majority of people who come to a haunted house are groups of fours and sixes.
Yeah.
Now you use that 6 foot and quite frankly, it just looks like a big crowd that you can't see the space.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was a good decision on our part was to actually increase that spacing. And that really made we later heard from customers. That was one of the things that really made them feel more secure is that they weren't essentially being herded like they usually are, like cattle through, you know, it is a haunted house. And we typically have a 2-, 3-, 4-hour wait to get into our attraction. And, you know, we can hold up to about 4,000 people on the property in a waiting line. So, you know, it allows us to be able to create safer spaces by giving them that extra space. So, and then certainly, you know, in our what's called our chute system, very similarly to when you board a roller coaster and you kind of get into your different lines. And then when it's time for you to go, then you kind of go in your line. We have a chute system similar here at the factory. And what we did decide to do, though, is we made a decision to pretty much let groups come through. And that certainly was, you know, from a budget perspective on the financials end, that was probably my hardest headache was, you know, if you're, let's say it's a group of six people that all show up, but they're not the same household group. And now I have to split that six people who are each two people in a group or two people in a pair on a date. Now that one group just became three groups.
Yeah.
And I have to input them in three different groups, which now just tripled my input or just decreased my triple speed of my input. So that was hard because we couldn't forecast it and there wasn't a way to figure that out. And so, you know, on our metrics side of selling timed ticketing, which was another thing that we did to kind of really help keep the majority of our customers off property, was we had to really have some flexibility in our time ticketing. And certainly when people were entering the chutes and as they would enter the haunted house. And of course, we hired a lot more staff as well, both on the cleaning end and on the operations end inside the haunted house, just to kind of, you know, our flow control, we really wanted to make sure that there wasn't a bunch up or, you know, a bottleneck or a spot where the conga line happens, because then, of course, it's just going to take one person who's going to whip out their phone and be like, well, here we are at Fear Factory. And look, there's 50 of us crammed into a room.
Yeah. There's all the bad PR that goes all over Facebook. And that's when you get the calls to the marshal.
Yeah, exactly. So we really had to be careful. And we're certainly seeing, you know, I mean, I see what's happening at Disney. I see what's happening at, you know, Universal's Volcano Bay and different restaurants, and I can see that there's kind of a little bit of lax in the enforcement side, but at the end of the day, I want to do what's right. You know, I want to do my best to make sure that people feel safe, because certainly customers aren't going to come, but staff aren't going to show up either if they don't feel safe. And I think that's one thing to remember is you got to take care of your team.
Yeah, well, that's one thing I wanted to mention as well. I mean, with the whole staffing side of things, and with obviously I can only speak for here in the UK with things opening up, but my wife, she's a manager of a bar and restaurant, and she obviously has her team of 20 staff and whatnot, and it's all well and good at trying to make sure that customers are safe and social distanced and either wearing PPE if it's advised or whatnot, but then you got a whole other ball game when it comes to your staff. You can't all of a sudden cram 50 members of staff into a tiny little staff room like you potentially would before. It's got to be all spaced out and whatnot. I know we touched on the staff a little bit earlier, but again, you've basically got multiple different headaches that have all got to work together. You've got to make sure that the horn is, the flow works well. There's no bottlenecks, like you say. You've got to make sure that the customers are keeping safe. But then, like you just mentioned, the staff are, if you have no staff, you have no horn, do you? So you've got to make sure they're looked after too.
Yeah, 100%, yes. And I think, that's where, our other owners, we have five owners total. And working closely with Heidi Dunfield, Rob's wife, and Cindy Sharp, Keith's wife, and being able to really build, how do we work all these logistics out, in a very short time frame, to get it all put together. And I think, I'm very thankful that we have a really strong team. I've been on the property now. This is my this will be my fifth year of helping kind of keep things kind of help navigating the ship on the turbulent seas. And it's been really great to be able to really build our leadership team to where we have great leaders who have great skill. And this is definitely not. There just is no way we could have done this as a one man show. There just isn't.
No.
And I think, and there's some haunted houses that I've talked to that said, well, I'm the owner and I'm the manager and I make all the decisions and I help do all the construction and I get everything done. And I politely told him that I don't think you should open this year. You have to make your own decision, but you've got it. This is just so big. You've got to delegate.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the best.
Multiple minds are better than one, aren't they?
Yeah. You've got to. Survival is, same as I always think of a pirate ship that, when the pirate ship's getting tossed around at sea, you can't just have one person who's doing everything. And so being able to share the load a little bit and relying on your team and empowering them to be able to make decisions based within the restrictions that you've got, go for it. I think in general, most people would be surprised how committed people are to their haunted house, especially a home haunt. They're willing to take one for the team and step up. And those are the people that you're going to need for the next 10 years. So you might as well empower them now.
Yeah, empower them now, look after them now, make sure everyone's safe moving forwards. Because this is just, you guys opening halfway to Halloween. At least, this is going to sound really weird, we don't want COVID here at all whatsoever, but at least it's come where it has. So you can, you can have that dress rehearsal halfway to Halloween before it is the big, like you say, running for 28 days. Because if you put something in place, and it could have been, still a fantastic plan that you put into place, but it didn't quite work on night one, you're then screwed for night two and three. And it's not one of those things where you can iron out the kinks throughout the run. And I know the whole idea of haunts, that they might slightly change throughout the haunt run, and you might move actors in different places, or you might change a script slightly because it's running too long. But with that's haunt talk. When it comes to actually COVID-19 talk, you need to make sure that night one, boom, this is working. So the fact that you've had this halfway to Halloween, really, it means that you can get really into fifth gear when it comes to Halloween coming up in a few months' time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of why we decided to share this big, massive 60-page plan with everyone, is because it not only includes our 30-page contingency plan, but a 30-page post plan of learning moments, what worked, what didn't work.
Are there any key moments that really did, you thought this has worked so well? Is there anything that's really key, or anything that really you thought, I need to change this for next time?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the beauty of COVID is it's the beauty of any catastrophic event, right? That it pushes you into this space where you're like, damn, like this, I cannot do anymore. Yeah, and then you realize that something really beautiful came out of it. There's so much. What's a really good, just, you know, as simple as hand sanitizer. So we typically only have like one or two pumps of hand sanitizer for our back of house cast. Mm-hmm. But as every haunted house has the haunt plague. Every haunted house has this sickness that goes through their cast every year, right? We all have it.
Always.
Industry wide. And granted this was for one night, but we realized that everyone was incredibly healthy 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
And what we're realizing is that having that hand sanitizer and having someone going around, you know, sanitizing doorknobs every hour. I mean, who cares? It's not that big of a deal. Get a can of Lysol and just spray everything down once an hour and you're good. Yeah. We think it made a big difference. We really do. And so that's one thing that we're going to keep. Mm-hmm. Certainly signage wise, you know, we kind of were a little abrasive is probably the right word, where we, you know, we were very firm about what we expected from customers.
Yeah.
But we also, the disclaimer was right there. We expect you to follow rule A, B, C, D, E, and F. And if you don't, here's G, which means we're going to ask you to leave. And it was very firm. And we didn't have a single concern, a single complaint. You know, customers weren't in actors' faces. We were really impressed just in general. And maybe that's that. You know, maybe the best of the best came out for this event and we didn't get a chance to see our usual 60,000 people that come through every month and a half, every 40 days. But it allowed us to really think about how we can better communicate. So, and likewise, we had learning moments on the opposite end where we were like, you know what? We probably don't need, I mean, the health department required us to have all these people for cleaning, but we could probably only deal with 3 or 4 of them instead of 10 of them. Yeah. And you know, and we of course went overboard. You know, there's a whole section in the plan about above and beyond of all this extra stuff that we're not required to do, but we're doing it just to show our due diligence, both to our government officials and to really show that how we can do this. And I think in those cases, there's ways that we could dial back a couple of things and certainly save a lot of money. I mean, let's not lie, like this. The amount of money it costs to be able to put this on is ridiculous. Did not make money at zero. We're way in the hole. And I think, but it allowed us, I would rather lose money now in a halfway to Halloween spring event than I would lose a lot more money having to learn those lessons in the fall when that's my
absolutely.
Credit. So we were smart to be able to make some of those decisions and invest those funds ahead of time to get those learning moments in. So, and that's the goal of the plan is that, you know, everyone else is going to do the same thing and, you know, take the plan and certainly, you know, my disclaimer always is that, you know, it's not a cut, copy and paste. This is something that you've got to read yourself and then you've got to apply what you think is best based in the city and county code that, you know, that you have and you have to go from there and rewrite your own contingency plan, but you know, use ours as a template and we wish you the best of luck. So.
Absolutely. And also it will change over time as well. You know, if government advice change or guidance changes, potentially this contingency plan may have to change in correspondence to that. And like you say, each individual haunt, I mean, especially here in the UK, the diversity we have within attractions is, you know, it's A to Z. It's, you can go through one haunt where you, it's all, just a walkthrough with no actors, where you can go to something else where it's literally really intense and they're pushing you and shoving you, and you know, that's just one example when it comes to actor side of thing. But there's huge differences in the types of events we got, obviously in the States as well, all around the world. But I can go to something one night where it's all calm, relaxed, and there's a few jump scares here and there, and then I can go to somewhere else where I'm on a trailer ride for half the night, and I can go to somewhere else where I'm locked in a box for 20 minutes. You know, it all really is diverse big time. And obviously you guys, with this being, you know, you've opened up during the global pandemic, which is, you know, a huge hats off, and it's worked. It's been positive, and it's a great dress rehearsal ready for when it comes to the big show at Halloween. And you have put in these extra things that you say that you can dial down, but, you know, no one gets noticed or acknowledged for doing the bare necessities, do they? You know, it's, if your government say do X, Y, and Z, you really want to be doing A, B, and C and X, Y, and Z. And that's what you guys have done. So the contingency plan, you know, what sort of things can people expect to see from it? How can they get it for free as well? So we thank you hugely for that. I really do think lots of operators here in the UK will really, really benefit from it.
Good. Yeah, that's the goal. At this point, very quickly, it became less about, you know, saving our haunted house and really about saving an industry that we just were seeing crumble in front of us. So the contingency plan outlines everything. So from the beginning, you know, we had connected up with a third party health inspector who helped us really kind of just drill down a lot of the details that he felt were needed from a health department perspective, because he used to be a director for a health department.
Right. Okay.
That's certainly something I would highly suggest. He does do international work. So, you know, his name is actually probably just be easier to Google is his company, which is RESPRO, RESPRO. No, I'm not getting any kickbacks from him. He just was a great source. So, but Dennis Keith did really well in that phase. And so the plan is built around essentially, how do we show that we're doing our due diligence, that we're going above and beyond, and that we're meeting the 60 plus criteria from our state? Mm-hmm. And then it drills it down from there. And that's everything from how we're training our staff to the PPE that we're using to how are we mitigating any potential errors that may happen. How do we have extra staff on hand so that if there are those errors that they can quickly resolve them without having a big group of people in the way? And all of those different things. And it really spells it out in fine detail. In fact, just last week I got an email from an aquarium. It's, you know, no connection to a haunted house at all, but this aquarium, you know, just emailed me and said, hey, you know, so we're friends from a friend of a friend of a friend who owns a haunted house, and they suggested we look at your plan. And thank God we did, because now we've been able to use your plan, and we've changed it up to be able to meet the criteria here in our state. Wow. And we just got the go ahead from our government to open up the aquarium again. And perfect. You know, that's our goal. Like, our goal is that, you know, in general, we recognize that the entertainment industry is, you know, it's bigger than any of us. And yet collectively we are what make it up. And so, if you know, I think it's a great example of, you know, when the sea rises, all the ships rise. And I think if we can do the same thing, then we will. So to get the plan, to answer your question on the plan, go to our website, fearfactoryslc.com. The SLC stands for Salt Lake City. That's, we're in Salt Lake City, Utah. So go to fearfactoryslc.com, click on the FAQ under Contact Us. It's over there. And when you click on the FAQs, I believe the second one down on the left, it'll say, you know, what's the details or what's going on with COVID. And you can either download the short 2-page version, which is what we sent to all of our customers, or you can also download the 60-page, which will just take you to a form. And we just ask everyone just to put their name information. We're not going to spam it. We're not going to sell it or anything. We just want to know who's using our form, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's copyright free. Well, it's certainly copywritten by us. But if people want to use it, they can. We just want to know who's using it.
Yeah.
So you just fill out that form, and boom, you've got your PDF downloaded. You're ready to rock and roll. It's that simple. So we're, you know, like I said, it's something for us that, you know, in fact, we had a private consultant that said, you guys should sell this thing for easily $2,000, for purchase. And, you know, we talked about it, and, you know, I certainly know how much money we lost as a GM. And I was like,
of course.
I went to our owners and said, you guys, like, I'm up for giving this away for free. I think it'd be really awesome, but we also have money to make.
It's a business at the end of the day.
Yeah. And they said, yep, let's do it for free. it's going to be good for our industry. So it's a good reminder. Our owners are pretty awesome. And I think in general, we as a brand want to do what we can for the industry. So.
Absolutely, definitely. And I'm sure plenty of us in the UK already, myself, I don't own or run an attraction at the moment, but I'm thankful for it. And I'm sure everyone listening, whether it be, I mean, we have a selection of listeners, whether it be just fans, we have some owners, actors, a whole selection of people that listen to us in the UK and the States, which is great. We have 20% of our listeners are in the States, which is, you know, blows my mind. So it's really cool. So I'm really hoping that, you know, guys, everyone listening now, click the link. I'll pull it in the show notes as well. Fill out the details and thank, you know, Spencer and the team for you know, helping us out, because it's a very scary time at the minute. But with a contingency plan in place, with the way things are looking, fingers crossed, we can have a Halloween that we all know and love. Awesome. So, I mean, next up, it's counting down to September and Halloween. It's exciting but nerve-wracking, I'm guessing, at the moment.
Yes, indeed. It literally is both at this point. Yes.
Yeah, but it's exciting. And you're open for 28 nights starting, was it September 18th?
September 18th. Yep. I feel like it'll be here tomorrow fast as things have been moving this year.
I bet, big time. So, guys, if you're listening over in the Salt Lake City or close by, head over to the website, get your tickets, because I'm sure, I'm guessing you won't do any on-the-door tickets. It will all be online only, just to try and keep it, you know, COVID secure, help you out.
We've made a decision that we are going to do some door tickets, but it will be very, very minimal. So at this point, you know, the goal is just to drive as much online traffic as possible, which is going to keep everyone safer, and it's easier for us to communicate. So that's the goal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Big time. Perfect. Well, I mean, first of all, Spencer, thank you so, so much for coming on to the Scaretrack podcast. It really does mean a lot. It's really helped me out. A huge thank you. And, you know, best of luck when it comes to this Halloween, and hopefully we'll be able to speak again soon afterwards to see how it all went.
Yeah, indeed, and thanks for the invite. Thanks for the love for the Fear Factory. It's an amazing place. We certainly welcome anyone that wants to come.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, guys, there we go. Spencer Terry, thank you so, so much for coming on the Scaretrack podcast, and we'll speak to you soon.
Great. All right. Thanks for all your help. You're listening to
Scaretrack. So there we go, folks. A huge thank you to Spencer for coming on to the Scaretrack podcast. Really, really do appreciate it. There's 7 hours time difference as well between here and Utah, so I'm really glad that we're able to organize the time to be able to get on. He's been great, honestly. I reached out to him with a quick Facebook message, and straight away he was more than happy to come on to the Scaretrack podcast and indeed have a fantastic conversation with me here on the podcast, but also mainly to help you guys if you run or own a scare attraction, a haunt, anything that you want to open up in October. Honestly, go over to the website now, www.fearfactoryslc.com. That's fearfactoryslc.com. Click on the contingency plan, fill in your details, and get it. It's absolutely free. He said in his interview that people were like saying that he could sell this, and he's more than happy to spread it around the world for absolutely free. Don't get me wrong, there's some bits in there that you may think that you already know. However, just having a conversation with him now today, and obviously off air as well, there are things in there and things that he's mentioned that I really do think that here in the UK we could really use and put forwards, and still, even if it's a slightly different Halloween, make it a fantastic Halloween, because that's what we're here for. We love Halloween. It's the best time of year. We love scare attractions, haunted houses. It's really what we love. It is our passion, and we really hope it can carry on as normal as possible. And to all the negative people out there, well, stop being so negative, guys. We need a little bit of hope. Come on. If you haven't got hope, what have you got? Not a lot. Yeah, sometimes things look bleak, but we are looking at the light at the end of our tunnel now. So stop being so negative. We need a little bit of positivity. And fingers crossed, we can have a fantastic Halloween. So that brings us almost to the end of the episode. A huge thank you to Spencer for coming on. A huge thank you for you guys, to you guys for listening to the Scale Track podcast. Really, really do appreciate it. Remember, you can follow us on all our social media pages. We are on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search for Scale Track. Whilst you're there, make sure you follow Fear Factory at Salt Lake City as well. Again, I'll put all the links in the show notes, so just check those out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as well. And you know, support them, thank them. Spencer did say that I can tag him in this as well, so if you have any specific questions for Spencer, he'll be more than happy to answer them. We did actually put on our social media that you guys can send in your questions, but we had quite a handful in fairness, but we kind of already covered them within the interview anyway, so it was pointless bringing up the same thing again at the end of the interview. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. Fingers crossed we can have a fantastic Halloween, and I'll see you on the next episode. Bye, folks.